I have no idea what he said, but I'm sure it was good. I'm sure I agree. All right. Here we go. Astronomers are having a field day discovering new planets and finding water on these planets. Mars has ice, shows evidence of an ocean. How will finding life affect faith? How will finding intelligent life affect our faith? The answer is, has no effect. All right. Well, let me explain what I mean by that. So, now what we do know is that God created the universe. He created the planet. And He created life here. Now, did God create life somewhere else? I don't know. Does the Bible talk about it? No. All right. Why would it matter? I can't think of any reason why it would matter. I just can't think of any. All right. But this raises so many fun questions. Like, if God created intelligent life over there, would Jesus have to go die over there also for them? I don't know. This is a fun question. Probably life did exist on Mars at one time, because material is exchanged between the Earth and Mars. So it's fairly likely that life did exist on Mars. All right, now, a lot of people spend a lot of energy searching for extraterrestrial life because they don't find meaning in life here. So to an atheist, I'm serious. I mean, to an atheist, this seems like an important search. To us, you know, it's still curious, but it just has no effect on Christianity. The Bible doesn't address it. There you go. All right, can you explain what happened, why those boys got killed, you know, when they mocked Elisha? Now, that's in, 2 Kings 2. That is a little bit disturbing, you have to admit. These guys are saying, ha, 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 Baldy, and God sends bears and kills them. That seems a bit harsh. But I believe that there are certain things, I call them one-off events. So I believe God intervenes in history quite rarely for certain things. So for example, the thing with Ananias and Sapphira. I believe that's a unique event. Happened exactly one time and never again. All right? And I think people got the message, don't you? Everybody remembered that story. Now, are Ananias and Sapphira going to be in heaven? I think so. Has anybody here avoided sin since you've been a Christian? I haven't. And so there's one example of a one-off event. Another one-off event is the flood. Okay. Another one-off event, I think, is this rather strange story. And what was the message of this rather strange story? Do not disrespect God's prophet. You know what? I bet nobody ever forgot that story. All right? So I admit, it is a strange thing. It's hard to really picture such a harsh treatment. I don't think anybody's salvation was changed one way or another by that thing. From God's perspective, death is not the problem. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. So, you know, that story bothers me a little bit as well, I have to admit. All right. Same question about life in other places. Where does the soul of dead people go? Right. So the Bible talks about Hades, yes? All right. So there's the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. In the Old Testament, the good and the bad side of Hades, if you will, are called Sheol and Abaddon. In the New Testament, the good place is called Paradise. There is no separate name for the bad place, if you will. Now, the Bible tells us almost nothing about our state between physical death and final resurrection and judgment. And so what that tells me is we don't really need to know much about that. Because if we needed to know, God would have told us. Are we all naturally curious about that? Of course we are. Is it okay to be curious about that? Sure, why not? But should we focus a lot of attention on that? Definitely not. Because, you know, the Bible gives almost no attention to that. So anyway, you know, so it's hard to answer questions. Could somebody repent in Hades and switch? I don't think so. I mean, Hebrews 9 says it is destined for man to die once and after that to face judgment. So I don't think so. But, you know, whatever. I'll just leave God to figure out that kind of stuff. All right. So why did Jesus go and preach to these people in Hades? And what did he preach to them? I don't know. The Bible doesn't say. All right. So we know nothing. We know very, very little about it. But apparently there's like a kind of a waiting place. Some people call it soul sleep. But that implies that we're not conscious during that time. And I'm not sure that's what the Bible teaches. In fact, it seems not to teach that. It seems even Samuel came from Hades to give that message to the witch of Endor, right? By the way, we're not talking about ghosts. The Bible doesn't support the idea of ghosts. A ghost would be somebody who dies and they stay here. All right. Now, I'm not saying whether ghosts are real or not. I don't think they are, but you know, I don't want to make it like as if I am the one to say yes or no. I don't think they are. But put it this way: the Bible gives no indication that ghosts are real, but it does give an indication that there is some sort of conscious life in a place that's sometimes called Hades or Paradise or Sheol or Abaddon. Okay. Great. Now I want to talk about the Christian versus other worldviews. And this is pretty awesome stuff, not because of me doing a good job, but I think this is an area of apologetics that we need to improve in rather significantly. Because like I hinted at earlier, we've entered a period that scholars call the post-Christian age. Now, the extent to which a culture is in the post-Christian age depends on the culture. America entered the post-Christian age in the last 25 or 30 years. Europe entered the post-Christian age about 50 years ago, if not more. And I think Philippines is more on the verge of this. It's coming. It's just a matter of time. When I was young, you could have talked about Bible stories and assume people would at least kind of sort of generally know what you're talking about. In America now, if you start talking about Jacob and Isaiah or whatever, you might as well be talking about, I don't know, Martians or something like that. And so, for example, for a lot of people, if you say, let's look at the messianic prophecies about Jesus, they have no place of contact with that. So you have to kind of back up a little bit. But luckily, that was the situation in the first century. Almost all the people the Christians contacted came from a worldview radically different from the Christian or Jewish worldview. So we can look at Paul. We can look at Paul interacting with people who had no knowledge of the Bible or idea of Scripture being revealed or a personal God. In fact, we're going to spend a little bit of time looking at Acts 17, which is the classic example of sort of a worldview kind of apologetic. So we're going to use Paul's example in Acts 17 as sort of a model for doing worldview apologetics. So worldview apologetics basically says, let's find common ground where we have it. And that common ground may exist outside of the Bible or Christianity or anything that we're used to, even because the honest truth is most people we share with are kind of religious and stuff like that. But there's a significant number. If you just start doing a discipleship study, you gotta start at a lower level. Okay? But it's fun, and we need to learn how to do this, all right? So Jesus was interacting with a person who did not have the Jewish worldview. His name was Pontius Pilate. You know? And he said, "I came to testify to the truth." And postmodern Pontius Pilate, interesting. Pontius Pilate, being essentially a postmodern, said, "What is truth?" Isn't that interesting? And we've reached a place in America where people question whether a truth even exists. I was doing a lesson in Sweden a few years ago. I was doing a lesson on the existence of God, talking about the moral argument. And I made the mistake of saying, you know, some things are just wrong. You know, some things are simply wrong to do because they're wrong. And this woman, she almost fell out of her chair. She was so shocked that somebody would say that. And I was talking to her afterwards during the break. She was literally having trouble breathing because the idea that some things are wrong, that there's such a thing as sin, was so against her worldview. She just couldn't even embrace the idea. In Sweden, the only real sin is to call something a sin. All right, so this woman needs a worldview kind of discussion, rather than just marching right into, I don't know, John 3:16 or something like that. Okay? So culture is being secularized. The concept of morality is being lost. And even the idea of God is kind of evaporating. Now, I'm not here to make you depressed, because that was the situation in the Roman Empire. And I'm telling you, real Christianity can probably flourish, maybe even better in a situation like that than where you got a bunch of Momo sort of, you know, Christianity light, you know. So it's not necessarily a reason to be depressed. It is a reason to be concerned, because in a worldview that doesn't believe in moral absolutes, morality is relative. That's kind of a scary world, honestly. But as Christians, God's in control. We're good anyway, right? Really right? Or you're just saying right because you're supposed to? All right? So, Christianity's lost the intellectual high ground to a significant extent. So I want to challenge us to not let that happen. Do not be intimidated by these postmodernists and these materialists and these determinists. Don't be intimidated by them, because you're right and they're wrong. And truth lies on your side. Okay? All right. Now, there are a number of philosophies. I'm going to talk in the initial phase of this worldview discussion about naturalism and postmodernism. And then in the second part, after our break, I'll talk about the Hindu worldview and the other worldviews, okay? So that's just the order I'm going to do it. This talk was geared a little bit more towards what we come across in America than here, honestly. But we'll get to all the other stuff anyway, so it's okay. All right? So I want to talk about worldview. A worldview is the perspective one uses to process and interpret information received about the world. So you see something, and then you interpret it. And we interpret it according to the basic assumptions that we make. All right? And those assumptions are called your worldview. Everybody has a worldview, even if they don't know what it is. James Sire, who wrote my favorite book on Christian worldview, says, "A worldview is a set of presuppositions which we hold about the basic makeup of our world. Now, I want to ask you a question. This is a great thought-provoking question. What is the Christian worldview? In other words, what is the Christian description of reality that you could explain in maybe 4, 5, or 6 points to anybody, be they an atheist, an agnostic, a dualist, a polytheist, an animist, any of these isms? Okay, what is it? Now, I'm going to give my version of that later on. Just think about it. But I'll tell you, I'm going to describe in about 6 or 7 points the Christian view of the world. And I'll tell you, interestingly, every one of these is found in the first 2 chapters of Genesis, which tells me that Genesis 1 and 2 is the most brilliant thesis on theology ever written by anybody, anywhere. It is amazing and deep theology, which reminds me of what I said earlier. This is never intended to be a scientific treatise. It's a theological treatise. Okay? Now, I want to talk about worldview. Now, this thing, I just made this up. I mean, I was just thinking about worldview and trying to start to think about it, teach it. And I came up with this idea. This is my own personal 3-part outline on what would make a good worldview. And I think you could use this in any discussion with people about their worldview. Okay? Number one, it should be true. In other words, your basic assumptions about the world are either true or not true. Now, wouldn't it be better for it to be true than not true? That seems kind of obvious. Now, what do I mean by true? What I mean by true is consistent with reality. In other words, the things that we can clearly observe to be true, this worldview is consistent with that. Okay, got it? So I don't mean true with a capital T true. It means it's the truth in the broadest sense. I mean true in the sense that what we know about reality is in agreement with that. Number two, it needs to successfully answer the questions, the fundamental questions that everyone seeks answers to. By the way, I'll tell you those answers are not when, where, how many, and by what means. Those questions are the ones that I already proposed. Why am I here? What is my purpose? What is my role? What is my place? What is my ultimate place? What is right? What is wrong? Those kinds of things. Okay, and number three, those who ascribe to this worldview, one could reasonably and logically infer, because of that, they would be better people than otherwise. Now, you might say, the skeptic might say, well, everybody's idea of better is different. I don't agree with that. I think you could sit down a Buddhist, Shinto, I don't know, Hindu, Muslim, atheist, Buddhist, blah, blah, blah. Sit them all in a room and say, all right, let's come up with a list of 6 things that would describe a good person. I think that would be an easy task. You know? Humble, helpful, open-minded, you know, that would actually be pretty easy. So what we could do is for each of these worldviews, which is exactly what we're going to do, we could ask, given the basic assumptions of this worldview, can a reasonable person say this would tend to produce those effects? By the way, I'll tell you the answer right now. Christianity, slam dunk, slam dunk, slam dunk compared to every other worldview, except maybe Judaism, because Judaism's worldview is virtually the same. All right, remember, these are the questions that matter. What am I? What happens when I die? What's my purpose? What's my value? Now, the first worldview I want to show, now I can afford to skip through this more than normal because of the talk we did the very first yesterday. Right? I kind of dealt with materialism as a worldview because I was talking about the fact that it's circular reasoning and all that. Okay, got it? So I can afford to talk a little bit fast here. So naturalism, or sometimes called scientism, sometimes called materialism. Now, there's another word called determinism. Determinism is more like a philosophy than a worldview, but it's all kind of the same thing. The belief that the only reliable or valid instrument for deciding what is true or of value or proposition is the scientific method. All right? Now, I'm going to look at some other statements of this idea. Now, not all scientists ascribe to this worldview. I'm a scientist. I do not ascribe to this worldview at all. A significant number of them do. It just so happens those are the loud ones. Those are the ones who start talking as if the other people weren't even in the room, as like I showed you. Now, if this is true, then there exists no basics for ethics or morality. There's clearly no God, no capital T truth, except physical things, etc. This has got some problems. Now I'm going to look at a couple of statements of this philosophy. Richard Lewontin said, "We exist as material beings in a material world, all of whose phenomena are the consequences of material relationships amongst material entities. In a word, the public needs to accept materialism, which means they must put God in the trash can of history, which such myths belong." All right? And the people who say this act as if, obviously, any intelligent person would agree with these, with my position. Okay? Richard Dawkins, we already read his. Only that which can be observed and measured through the technique of the scientific method is real. Everything else is unreal. All right? That's what that... Remember I talked about that BBC program? That's what that guy said. All right? Life is explained in purely mechanical terms. Phenomena such as mind and consciousness are considered nothing but epiphenomena. Now, that's a really big word. So basically, although you appear to be self-aware, you're not. It just appears that way. These things are only complex physical phenomena and are not real. All right? Now, I want to apply my three-part outline. Is it true? Does it answer the questions that matter? And does it create a better person? Number one, it is patently false. It is not true. Atheism is a lie. All right? Second of all, it provides no satisfactory answers to any of the questions that anybody cares about. And besides, if people logically follow this worldview, this world is heading for hell in a handbasket. This is not a good worldview. Now, I already talked about why it's not true, circular reasoning. It can't explain anything. All right? Remember the BBC show that's mentioned here. Now, if this is true, then you don't exist. All right? Remember I talked about that. If this is true, then there is nothing non-physical that's real. If this is true, then your life has no value, and too bad for you. If this worldview is true, you have no purpose, except possibly the purpose to create as many copies of your DNA as possible. Now, that is a scary prospect. If your purpose is to create as many copies of your DNA as possible, think about the things you could justify. Think about that. There are millions of direct descendants of Genghis Khan. Right? Why are there millions and millions of direct descendants of Genghis Khan? Well, if you know much about Genghis Khan and what he did, wow. If materialism is true, then love doesn't exist. Like I said, you should say to your wife or husband, I chemical you, not I love you. If this is true, then there is no justice. None. No justice. If this is true, then human rights are not based on actual value. They're just arbitrary. Reasons materialism is not true, number one, because the universe was created. And if the universe is created, that means physical reality is not the only reality. Life was created, right? We talked about DNA and all that sort of stuff. Life clearly was created. Well, if life was created, then this worldview is false. Because of the fine-tuning of the universe. The fine-tuning of the universe is proof that this worldview is not just a bad one, that it's not true. All right. We talked about what questions you can answer. Materialism doesn't answer any of the questions that matter. All right? Now, does naturalism or materialism produce good people? Well, if this is the correct worldview, then good and evil are meaningless words. And therefore, all actions are equally justified. So imagine people who believe that murder is not wrong. They might have the opinion that it's wrong, but it's just an opinion. And even that opinion is merely neurons firing in some random way. Even that is a random thing that is, you know, even the very opinion is not an actual opinion. It's just an epiphenomenon. All right? Imagine a world in which any kind of sexual behavior is, you know, is okay. Genocide? Well, if that allows you to create more copies of your genetic material, like Genghis Khan, all right, that's justifiable. Why is racism bad, according to this worldview? What would be bad about that? What would be bad about slavery from this worldview? Nothing. So is this a good worldview? It's not true. It doesn't answer any of the questions we care about. And it would make us not be good people. It would make us be kind of scary people. And the thing is, atheists are clueless about this. Everything they value as positive cultural values was hijacked from Christianity. And they don't understand this. This is kind of scary. Now, it should be scary not for Christians, but for atheists. Because for us, well, we're going to heaven. Now, it is kind of scary for our children to be raised in a world, but anyway. All right, I talked about this. All right, no wonder intellectuals overreact. So let's talk about postmodernism, just really briefly. I don't have a lot of time for postmodernism. Honestly, I'm not sure if it deserves a whole lot of time, honestly. All right, but postmodernism, that's the controlling intellectual influence in America today. It's the controlling influence in the millennial generation. The idea that it's true for you, it's not true for me. The idea that holding to one value system and rejecting all others is the worst possible thing you could do. That comes from postmodernism. All right? Now, really, arguably, postmodernism is the worldviewless worldview. All right, that's kind of weird to say, but postmodernism is almost by definition the worldviewless worldview, which says no worldview is correct. It's all arbitrary, but it's so awesome to have so many different ones. It might be confusing, but it's awesome. That's what postmodernism says. Postmodernism says truth, if it exists at all, is determined by those who hold to it. So truth is the property of culture. There is no absolute truth. Now, I would say to my postmodern friend, so you're saying there's no absolute truth. Are you absolutely sure that there's no absolute truth? Is it an absolute truth that there's no absolute truth? What kind of worldview is that? By the way, a lot of Christians make postmodernism the enemy of everything that's Christian. I don't fully agree with that. I don't think we should make postmodernism kind of the bogeyman. Back in the 40s and 50s, Christians made communism the enemy of everything. Why is communism worse than capitalism? Now, I'm not saying we should embrace communism. Don't you dare misquote me. All right? I'm not sure that postmodernism is any worse than modernism, the scientific worldview. In fact, there's things about postmodernism I actually like a little bit. Postmodernism embraces many different cultures, rather than saying one culture is better than another culture. I actually agree with that. I believe postmodernism gives a more accurate view of history than modernism does. But postmodernism as a worldview is a total disaster. Postmodernism as an intellectual approach to certain topics at the university, I actually think it's not a bad thing. So, unlike some speakers that I've heard say, postmodern, because you know what? The younger generation has a more of a postmodern mindset than the older generation, which has modernism. I see as many disadvantages to my generation's mindset as I see to the younger generation's mindset. My generation, it's all about doctrine. Their generation, it's all about the heart and caring for the needs of the poor. You know? So I'm not saying better or worse necessarily. And so I don't ascribe to this idea, oh, the world is totally falling apart. I think postmodernism is no better or worse necessarily than modernism, the scientific worlview. Possibly in some ways it's better. It's different, and it's also kind of crazy and confusing. It's certainly not as good as the Christian worldview, that's for sure. So I want to mention some positive contributions, giving honor to culture, beauty, wonder, imagination, more accurate description of history. It accepts more than just the Western mindset. So the postmodernism is more accepting of Eastern ways of thinking. So, for example, maybe acupuncture is not idiotic. You know? So as Asians, you should, on some level, kind of maybe embrace certain things that postmodernism has brought. However, there's things about it that are really bad. It's very confusing, that's for sure. No worldview is preferred. The idea of truth itself disappears. Now that is a problem. Okay? Got it? So they say it's true for you, but it's not true for me. Now wait a minute. That doesn't make sense. To me, I don't know, 1 + 1 = 2. Now you say 1 + 1 = 3. I say 1 + 1 = 2. We can't both be right. You say the universe was created. I say the universe wasn't created. Now, we can't both be right. What are you talking about? That's what postmodernism says. If that's true, then there's no rational means to discover the best worldview. All right? So either truth corresponds to reality, or truth is relative. Well, I say truth corresponds to reality. So therefore, postmodernism is not, remember, 3 points. Whether it's true or not, whether it answers the questions we care about, and whether it makes us a better person. No, no, and no for postmodernism. I say truth is either discovered or created. Now, which is it? It's discovered, not created. Postmodernism says truth is created. The problem with that is, that's not true. It's discovered. All right? There's all this stuff. There's too much stuff. Self-refuting. It's not true. For one thing, science says it's not true. Postmodernism says if 27,000 people say gravity's not real, then it's not real. All right? Good luck with that one. You know, if 100,000 people say that homosexuality is okay, then it's okay. The problem with that is, it's not okay. Alright? If that's true, then everything in principle is okay. But there's certain things that are not okay. If your culture told you it's okay to jump off a cliff, are you going to jump off a cliff? Now, science may be bogus as a worldview, but science shows that postmodernism is wrong. Okay? Now, does it answer the questions that we care about well? So here's the question, what's my purpose? I don't know. What's my value? I don't know. Where am I going? I don't know. What's my purpose in life? I don't know. Is that the right thing to do? I don't know. I would say postmodernism does the worst job of answering the questions we care about of any worldview. Now, if we accept postmodernism, would that logically make the postmodern person better than otherwise? I'd say no. Not even close. Kind of scary. If sin is determined by culture, then is it even sin? Now, which is better, Nazi culture or, I don't know, whatever, any other culture? All right? They would say that's just as good as any other. Let's embrace that culture. I don't agree with that. Now, according to postmodernism, any reformer is an enemy. Because think about it. Even Mahatma Gandhi, let's say Martin Luther, Jesus Christ, Moses, any reformer is the enemy. Because the reformer says that's wrong. The reformer says corruption is wrong. Well, guess what? Corruption is wrong. But the postmodern says, who are you? So, the revolutionary who wants to create change in this world is the natural enemy of postmodernism. So I say it does not make a better person. All right, we're going to end by me describing the Christian worldview. And then our last session, we'll talk about Hinduism, Buddhism, other isms. Okay, got it? So according to the Christian worldview, the physical world is number one, real. Number two, created. And number three, good. Okay? All those are in Genesis 1. Number two, according to the biblical worldview, there's a physical reality and there's a separate spiritual reality. Alright? Number three, the creator of both the physical things and the spiritual things is God. Number four, humans have both a physical and a spiritual nature. Right? All right? But the spiritual nature is the more essential nature because the physical passes away. Okay? Number four. This gets to one of those hard questions we'll talk about tomorrow. The physical world is good, but not everything is good. Evil exists, and that evil is real. And that evil is the result of those who rebel against God. So God created us to do good, but He also gave us the ability to not do good. So the evil in the world is the result not of creation, but of rebellion. Now, all other worldviews disagree with that, by the way, except Islam. And that's a point of problem for those other worldviews, I believe. Number six, I really should have put number six earlier in the list, honestly. It should have gone after number three. I think I need to change this slide. Now, the Creator has certain qualities. And those qualities include justice. Oh, wait, it's not in this. Oh, okay. Where did the... This is the wrong version of it. I'm going to pull up a better version than this. Erase that. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to give you a version that I'll put up on the screen tomorrow, okay? Number six, God is defined by certain qualities. Those qualities include justice, holiness, omniscience, omnipotence, and love. And every one of those qualities God has infinitely. Okay? Number seven. Don't bother writing this down. I'll put this in my slideshow tomorrow. That rebellion against God brings judgment. Because one of God's traits is justice, rebellion against God produces judgment. And then number eight. The solution to that is found in the substitutionary death of Jesus Christ. Okay, that would be the Christian worldview. Now, I'm going to argue that that is a good worldview because it's true and answers the questions that people care about, and it makes us a better person than we otherwise would have been. But I'm going to defend that claim after our break of about 6 or 7 minutes.